You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. This business talk show airs live on Tuesday and Wednesdays at 4 p.m. If you're listening to us at some point in the future, listening to us as a podcast, maybe off of Apple iTunes or one of the other podcasting services, well, then we would like to say thank you for finding us and making us a part of your busy business day. And would also like you to consider listening to our show live during one of its broadcasts here on octalkradio.net. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, make better business decisions. If you are listening to the show live today, then consider joining the conversation with one of our two guests. A way to do that is to find the community chat room section of octalkradio.net's website, log in, post your thoughts, ideas, comments. Our producer, Paul, does bring them to my attention, and possibly I can bring them on to one of our two guests today. Our second guest will be joining us in about a half hour. She is Jules Christensen of Jules Ford Maternity, and we're going to be talking with her about building a differentiated business. But our first guest is a published author, Fred Gaston of Gaston & Gaston, and we're going to be talking a variety of things with Fred, and one of them is his latest book, The Naked Contract. Fred, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going well. Why don't we begin the interview very simply, Fred, by asking you to explain to our audience your professional background and kind of your path to your current firm.
Yeah, well, that's fairly easy. So I'm a third-generation attorney, and my grandfather and my father did primarily criminal defense, but I wound up moving into the Navy, actually. I was very interested in languages as a college student and all that other stuff, and so I spent 6 years with the Navy doing intel, and instead of going career, I was right on that precipice. It was just a decision whether to go career Navy or do something else, and so I fell into the family law, the family work, and that's where I am today.
And tell us a little bit more about the law practice, the firm. You know, how is it different as a law practice? You know, what's your area of specialty and expertise?
Well, you know, the thing is, so I started out with just like my grandfather, my father, and my sister, doing criminal defense, and I figured out very early on that business was an awful lot more fun, and more people were coming to me for business advice and business structures and business disputes, and so we just went with that. That was several years ago, and started building things up, and so now we have an 11-attorney firm in, of course, Orange County and L.A. and San Diego, and we're doing that. So my father used to say that you don't choose your practice finds you, and that's true. And even though that they did something else, here we are. We're doing business litigation primarily and mergers and acquisitions also.
So share with us, if you would, Fred, of all the particular experience and lessons that you've learned through your professional career, is there a guiding principle that you use in kind of growing the firm and dealing with your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually three, and we talk about this in the book, in The Naked Contract. The primary thing is picking the right people to work with, because your work is more than just your work. It's what you do for a living, right? And this is how you spend your time. So the primary thing is picking the right people. Beyond that, it's relatively small, and it's all downstream, meaning you just need to have good communication, make sure that you share the same vision, and formalize everything. If you don't do those three things, you can still get yourself out of a problem, but it's going to be more expensive.
Interesting that a lawyer would say formalize everything.
Yeah, right?
And coming from a family of attorneys, you probably learned that just through osmosis at the dinner table or observing, you know, your father. But in my experience, being an executive coach to business owners and CEOs, many times their issues come from a lack of maybe a ambiguity, let's say, in their dealings with other people. You know, the spoken word, a conversation can have definitely two meanings if you have two people involved in it. And at the end of the day, it's what's written down and agreed to in writing that will hold sway many times in a dispute.
That's right. And, you know, it cuts both ways, actually. And this is why I say I think it's very important to formalize things, because if you have a handshake deal with somebody, most of the time, that's fine. But if you decide to formalize something, it's not necessarily to protect yourself from the fallout of a dispute. However, if you decide to formalize something, it flushes everything out. So partner A, partner B, you start writing things down and you say, is this what you meant? And the other person might say, no, that's not what I meant at all. And so that you make sure that everybody is on the same page. So it's not really insurance. It's just making sure that everybody shares the same vision, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense because, it takes the ambiguity of the spoken word out of it, but it also, I think, takes the ambiguity of thought out of it as well, because, you know, many times even the act of the individual writing out what they thought they had said, I think they find through the discipline of putting pen to paper or keystrokes or whatever it is that they have to really think a little deeper to communicate more effectively in writing than
absolutely,
they think they might
absolutely.
Have done just by saying it.
Well, and you know this from your practice. I mean, when you're starting a business, everybody's very excited. Everybody's going to make $1 million a year. It's very, very easy. But then, like, very subtle things will start to creep in. For example, do you want to have this business for the next 15 to 20 years and have it as a cash flow business? Is this the type of thing you want to flip in 3 to 5 years? And oftentimes, business partners aren't on the same page. So by formalizing things, you actually you air all that out. And it's, again, not trying to make sure that you can get the better advantage of someone in a lawsuit, but just making sure that you're going to make money with your partner and be happy doing it, right?
Especially when you have to bring a third party in to sort of explain the relationship or just to communicate what you two have agreed to. I know in working with some of our entrepreneurs, unfortunately, sometimes the government gets involved, whether it's the IRS, mostly IRS. And if you don't have a good understanding in writing between two partners, it really makes it hard to explain to that third party what the relationship really is. Because, you know, especially if you're dealing with the IRS, in my experience,
yep.
They sort of trust but verify. And mm-hmm. You really need to be able to kind of demonstrate to them what your operating, you know, agreements
are.
Oh,
yeah. And in a shared vision that comes through or guaranteed through formalization, whether you're dealing with the IRS or employee disputes or whatever it may be, if you know exactly what your partner is going to say, there's great strength in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or less weakness. Okay. So we're going to take our first sponsorship break. And when we come back, we're going to get into the Naked Contract, the book, The Naked Contract. And we're going to spend some time having Fred kind of take us through the inspiration for writing, because I think it's a great book for business owners. It's kind of a guide, if you will, in some ways. We're going to go through some of the key elements of the book as well. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitments in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plans and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn more about our executive peer group.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. As promised, we're going to get a tour of the Naked Contract. Fred, would you please start by discussing the inspiration for taking the time and making the commitment to write this book?
Yeah, you know, it stems from about 100% of the time when I talk with a new client, and so that you know, our clients, the majority of them are small business owners, so you're looking at under $50 million a year gross, typically under $20 million a year, and that is the California business market, right? If they get successful to the point that they have been sued, which I tell them they should be congratulated because it means somebody thinks they're actually making enough money that they can get something out of them. Congratulations on being sued, but they freak out. And so we go through the exact same conversation every single time. Like, what is your business structure? How many business partners are involved? What is the situation? Is it internal? Is it external? What is the issue? So we wind up lining up the best defenses. If we have to be proactive and do something aggressive, that's fine. But it's basically the exact same conversation. It takes about 90 minutes to 2 hours every single time. And so what I've done is distilled that conversation, the first client interview, and given it out for free, basically. We're not trying to make an awful lot of money on the book. Because a lot of folks I have found, as soon as they have that information, things click, they drop into place, they can resolve the situation on their own. If they can't, then they can come to me or a different attorney and take it to the next level. But the whole thing was primarily information distribution and anxiety reduction. That was it.
And help the audience understand, if they had a copy of the Naked Contract, the Business Owner's Guide to Disputes in their hand, what could they expect to learn from that book?
You know, the best thing is if they read it when they were starting a business. And what they'll learn primarily is how to avoid a dispute. Secondarily, but just as important, is how to diffuse a dispute, meaning it's not going to get expensive or ugly. And then third, if you have a dispute and you have to have an attorney involved, what it's going to cost you, what the process is going to look like, and what you can expect not only in the process but the end result.
As I read your book, and you just kind of took us through it in the sequence as well as you organized it, I thought it was very logical that way, where it sort of builds to the arc of the story, if you will, of the book is avoiding, you know, kind of building the framework so that you don't have a dispute, but should you as a last resort, let's say, or get forced into the dispute, kind of understand what you're getting into. And, you know, many times it's my experience that a business that comes under a legal dispute, many times it's the first time that individual who is the business owner has ever had any type of a legal issue, and so they really don't have a lot of experience with the process, either on the personal side or certainly then on the business side.
That's true.
You know, uncertainty leads to fear, and by sort of understanding from taking the time, like you said, to read this book, and it is a well-written, quick read, which is hard to do, especially with kind of the subject matter that you're dealing with. And I give you a lot of credit for, many times it is harder to say it in fewer words than more words, and I felt as I read this that there weren't wasted words in your book. You really, it appears to me that either your natural writing style or that you spent effort to make this information accessible for the entrepreneur and business owner.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And, you know, honestly, that is the entire thing. You know, you're exactly right. The uncertainty and the unknown does lead to fear, which leads to panic, which leads to taking your eye off the ball, which if you're a business owner or an entrepreneur, cuts into your bottom line. And so the idea is if you understand the process, you understand the way these things work, it reduces anxiety, and it's just a different part of your business. I mean, disputes happen. Everybody knows this. And if you know that there is a process and you know it's going to work, then everything is fine. You know that nobody's going to take your oldest son. Nobody's going to take your children's college fund. Everything's going to be fine. This is the way we do things. It's going to take a year, maybe six, in the worst-case scenario. But you can budget for it, you can take care of it, and it's manageable.
And that is the sometimes the unspoken, although you talk about it, risk of disputes and legal actions is it takes a lot of the focus and can take a lot of the focus from the business owner's daily operating of the business, as well as the longer term strategy and things that they need to be working on as the CEO.
Well, that's right. And you know, there's different philosophies from the business owner's perspective on how to handle these things. If they're being sued, for example, it should be looked at as a business expense and a business item that has to be taken care of, and it should be cauterized and taken care of. And so, at least at our firm, in any event, that's what we try to do. We try to take it away from the entire business. So that they can do business and make money, we take care of the small lawsuit. On the other side, and you've seen a lot of this, especially with intellectual property and copyright disputes and that type of thing, lawsuits, for good or ill, can be used as a strategic weapon for a lot of businesses. So they can try to bog down other businesses through lawsuits and so on. And that's a different thing we have to deal with. But again, I think the most important thing is that business owners understand that litigation, lawsuits, lawyers are a part of the business expense and just the business process, especially in California at this point.
Final question on the book. How did you come up with the name of the book?
Well, the naked contract is a term of art. And it was kind of sexy, so our PR guy said we should go with that.
So sell the sizzle, yay!
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah. But a naked contract is a contract that has no consideration, meaning basically it's just a promise. It says, hey, I'll come to your house and give you $1,000, and I'm not going to get any for that, and if I don't show up, then good luck making me give you $1,000, right?
Mm-hmm. Let me bring our focus to kind of you experience. Could you share with our audience a current challenge facing the practice and explain your ideas or actions that you're taking to mitigate the challenge?
Yeah, you know, especially since the bubble popped and we entered into the recession, we've seen an awful lot of work. We do primarily litigation and business litigation. It has been accounts receivable, vendors not paying, reduction in cash flow. And from the business owner's perspective, the biggest problem we've seen, attorneys are terrible for business people, right? Because they come in, they say, hey, this is a problem, I need to fix it. Any other business, they would say, well, here's my quote, this is how much it's going to cost. It may go over maybe 25%, unless, of course, it's a government contract. But maybe 25% above that, but that's it. And if you come into an attorney, they say, well, I think it's going to cost this, but it depends. So it might be $5,000, and it might be $250,000. And so business people are freaked out by the idea of spending money on any type of dispute resolution without a cap or without something that they can budget for. And a lot of firms have been doing this, too. I think we've been on the vanguard for it. But basically telling business owners, look, this is your problem. I think we can resolve it for X, whatever that cost is. And so that's been a challenge, being able to figure out exactly what the problem is and how much it's going to take so that we can come up with a bid for the business to solve the problem. So it's been a little bit challenging. However, I think we've been successful. We have a pretty good 35,000-foot view on this type of thing. So we can put it in a ballpark at least. And it's been very successful. So it's been a challenge, but also makes the client happy, and we're happy with it too because we get away from the hourly billing and so on. So it's worked out well.
It's interesting when you said lawyers don't always make the best business people, because it, and I think that's true of many highly educated professionals who are all about solving the problem in their area of expertise. People have maybe a view of a certain ways. In my experience, is that many times attorneys end up doing more than maybe they should for the amount of money that they end up getting from their clients. So it's just curious.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I've David Skelling, he's an attorney in our office, and this is a funny story. This happened a couple of months ago. But in regards to a car, you know, you got a thump when you're driving. If you go to a tire store, guess what they're going to tell you the problem is, right? If you go to a transmission store, guess what they're going to tell you the problem is? You know, it's either the transmission or the tires, right? And so one of the approaches we've taken over the last couple of years is, even though there's a lot of a drama and there's an awful lot of story behind every single case, is you start with, what is your ultimate goal? I don't even care about the backdrop. What is your ultimate goal? Is it that you want to have somebody pay you money? Is it you want to shut a competitor down? Is it that you want your intellectual property back? Is it that you want to send a message to your competitors? Whatever it is. And you start there. So you start with the end, and then you draw it all the way back, and then you formulate a strategy with that. And then the next question is, how much do you want to spend on it? And then, you know, we can either get you 100% of your goal, or 90% of your goal, or 75% of your goal, or whatever. But it's a different mindset, and I think the legal industry is starting to get wise to that, just starting in about 2008 plus. Because it has to be business sensitive and truly responsive to their clients. And I think we're doing a better job at it at this point.
How does someone find your book? Say they're listening today or at some future point on a podcast, and they want to get a copy of The Naked Contract, and or they'd like to learn more about you and your practice. How do they do that, Fred?
Yeah, thanks for that. They can find me at GastonandGaston.com, GastonandGaston. com, or they can just go to Amazon for The Naked Contract.
It's a great distribution vehicle, that Amazon.com, isn't it?
They're the best.
It's very nice to have the ability just to give out one site and know that if anybody wants to, they can pretty much get it there. What a great business model they've created there. Well, it's wonderful to have a published author on the program and someone who's taken time to contribute something that can help so many of the type of people that listen to our radio program is especially nice. So
we're going to come back, as I promised, with Jules Christensen of Jules Ford Maternity. We're going to be talking about her business and some other questions that we have developed. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
There's something happening out there today. All across America, we're seeing encouraging signs of economic recovery. Businesses are once again thinking about new growth, and new opportunities are emerging. But it raises the question, is your company positioned to take full advantage of the economic recovery and the opportunities it presents? Maybe it's time to ask, how has the recession impacted your business model? Is your business as relevant as it once was? Should you consider entering new markets or expanding into new categories? And what do customers really value about their relationship with you? The golden thread through all these questions and the answer to each and every one of them can be found in just one place. Your brand. It's much deeper than your logo and much bigger than your advertising. Your brand is the enabler of your entire business strategy. Rikus Baird is a brand strategy firm that can help. They specialize in business branding. They've helped hundreds of companies from startups to Fortune 500 leverage their brands to drive growth. They can do the same for yours. It's really quite simple. Find out more, just visit brandingbusiness.com. That's www.brandingbusiness.com. And plant the seed for economic growth.
Welcome back to Critical Mass for Business. My second guest is Jules Christensen. Imagine my surprise when I picked up Parenting OC, which is a magazine that says what every parent's talking about, and it was the mompreneurs issue, and one of them is Jules. So we're going to talk about that as well, Jules, but welcome
to Critical
Mass,
so much.
The radio show. Yeah, give us a little background for yourself. Tell us your story and sort of your inspiration for starting your business.
I have been sewing since I was a little girl. I was taught by my great-grandmother, Amelia, who owned a dress shop in Italy and then came here with my great-grandfather, pardon me, and reopened her store in Brooklyn. And so when they would all come over on the weekends and we would cook Sunday dinner, she taught me how to sew. When it came time to go to college, I told my parents I wanted to go to FIT and I was going to be a fashion designer. And they looked at me like I had three heads and said, no, you're never going to be a fashion designer. So I went to Arizona State and got my undergrad in art history and my graduate degree from Manchester University in arts administration. And here I am today, a fashion designer. And apparently a mompreneur, according to OC Parenting.
Tell me about the coverage and your inclusion in this and the term mompreneur.
The term mompreneur is actually a relatively new term for me myself, and I think it's getting used, you know, a lot right now because there is such a flux of startups, I think. And so with the advent of all these startups and these stay-at-home moms, you know, needing a second income and not being able to leave became the advent of the term, they contacted me. One of your questions that you know, we had talked about was marketing and how do I market? I don't market. I will not pay for marketing. Well, how I get my name out there is social media, Facebook, Twitter. And so by using those two tools, they had found me, saw that I do indeed live in Orange County, and contacted me and then presented me with a fabulous opportunity to be in their magazine.
So tell us about your firm. Know what you're professionally trained to do, what you've learned to do, but how did that translate into a business?
Basically, what had happened, I was pregnant with my son, and I had gained 83 pounds, which if you saw OC Parenting or my website, I'm very upfront about that. And I could, you know, with 83 pounds on my 5'6" frame, I could not find anything to wear. And so after, you know, trolling the mall and talking to other moms, I realized that there was a huge niche in the market of, you know, prenatal clothing that wasn't being filled because not all women, you know, only gain 20 pounds and just, you know, looks like they slid a basketball under their t-shirt. I mean, women gain weight during their pregnancy, in their face, in their arms, in their back, everywhere. And you want to be able to hide that while still looking good. And that's what Jules Ford Maternity is all about. We design clothes for real women. We don't design plus size. We don't design petite. But for real women with average weight gain during pregnancy.
I really enjoy having entrepreneurs on the show and entrepreneurs that build a business out of a personal experience or kind of an especially fun interview for me just because, you know, you can connect to the mission of the business. And I love the fact that you are willing to discuss your own situation, and 83 pounds is not an insignificant amount of weight to gain.
No.
I,
just, I think that's like a seventh grader, right? I mean, yes, it's very significant, honestly. But the thing, you have to be, you know, I had to be honest with myself, and I like to be honest with everyone. You know, like, this is what happened. I got huge. But by being so upfront and out there, I've had a lot of people come up to me and thank me, you know, thank you, because I don't like to, you know, I didn't want to tell anyone how much weight I gained. I'm like, who cares? You're pregnant. You're supposed to gain weight. You know what I mean? It's okay. And so I've been able to connect on a really personal level with a lot of women that way. So it's helped more than hurt. But, yeah, 83 pounds.
Can you share with our audience your guiding principle for your firm?
Yes, absolutely. It's all about being solutions-oriented. And everyone who works with me, for me, has to be in that mindset. The fashion industry waits for no one, let alone ever slows down. You always have to be able to find the answer, find the cure, find the solution to whatever challenge arises. And as any business owner in any industry will tell you, you know, these challenges arrive daily. So basically, it's, we don't have time to dwell on problems. We only have time to solve them. That's my company's motto. I don't, you know, if I have someone call and say, okay, you know, this is a problem, I don't want the problem, I just want the solution. And that's really what has gotten me to where I am today.
Where are you today?
Today we are, well, the thing that's tricky about the maternity market is that it's a one or two time buy. You know, even if you have a customer who comes and buys, you know, one of everything, they're not going to come back again because, as we all know, you're only pregnant for 9 months, hopefully. And so it was, how do we get these women to return? How do we make these customers into clients? And so Jules Ford Maternity has started offering nursing gear, nursing covers, nursing wear, things such as that, quilts, baby blankets, baby bibs, onesies, gifts, that sort of thing, to keep the client returning. And like I said, turning the customers into clients, which is key to any business, I think.
So maybe we've begun to open up a little bit of the business challenge, and you've kind of shared with us some ideas, because that certainly sounds like that would be a business challenge of your business model. But is there anything else that you can share with our audience about the challenge facing the firm and what you're doing about it?
Well, I mean, being a first-time mom and a stay-at-home mom and, you know, getting my business off the ground, time management is always an issue. There will never be enough hours in the day. I don't think, though, you have to be a mother to really appreciate that. But, you know, balancing, you know, having my studio in my house and being able to separate, okay, working me from mommy me, from wife me, if that makes sense. And really sort of compartmentalizing myself when I need to. Like, when the baby's down, then that's work me. When the baby's up, then I'm mommy me. When my husband's home, you know what I mean? And just sort of finding my groove, because when you do work from home, there is absolutely no separation of church and state. You know, talking to other people who work out of their home, I always feel the need that I should be working. And if I'm just sitting around, which I rarely am, with a one-year-old who's starting to take over, not just walk, but like rappel down the stairs, you know, you don't get that many free moments. But when I do, I always feel like there's something that needs to be done. So recognizing that, you know, 12 hours is enough of a work day.
Yeah, that's the down. The convenience is the upside of working out of your home and having an office in your home. The down is that the convenience can turn into a little bit of a curse, because you can walk by the office and get pulled in. And yeah, it's hard to maintain the work-life balance when work is inside your personal life, your personal residence.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I was fascinated when you and I met earlier here in beautiful Ladera Ranch, where we both reside, learning about how you're designing and creating your products. Could you share a little bit about your process, what you're doing here in Orange County, I might say, if not, you know, Southern California?
Sure. My process in terms of design is I design what I want. What I knew when I was pregnant was missing in the market. And a lot of times what I'll do is I'll just go through fashion magazines and I'll, you know, be like, you know what, that could be maternity. There's no reason that that couldn't be maternity, because you don't have to know that you're in a maternity store to know that you're looking at maternity clothing. It's very apparent with the way, you know, that it's cut. And so with Jules Ford Maternity, what, you know, one of my goals is to be the unmaternity of maternity clothes. So I look for non-pregnant inspiration. And also, we try to design with as many non-stretch fabrics as possible. Because when you're looking in the maternity realm, if you will, it's all stretch, spandex, ran, like, gross. Excuse me. I mean, it's not gross, but it's just after you've lived in that for 6 months, you want to be in something a little nicer, something a little more elegant. And so while trying to, you know, provide designs that don't make one look like a window drape, which quite frankly I think a lot of these designers do because they're not thinking about it, is also provide fabrics that are, that move, that are more structured, a little more tailored, doing that and trying to incorporate that into my process. And that's really, really it.
Where do you manufacture your clothing?
Everything is done in Southern California. I won't even, it's not a possibility for me to even think about manufacturing anything outside of the country, because I think first and foremost with the state of our economy, it's everybody's responsibility to take a part in its recovery. And by outsourcing that, I would be taking jobs away from Americans, and there's absolutely no way that that's going to happen. I would shut my company down before I let that happen. And for some, it works, you know, and for some businesses, and that's great. It's just for Jules Ford Maternity, it's not an option.
You know, you said earlier about marketing for you is the use of social media, and I can see very much how having a business that was inspired by personal experience and then being the face of that business as well as the kind of the, you know, the head designer and stuff, it really makes a lot of sense that social media and then also your target market, I would think, being social media enabled, it all kind of fits together for me. And I was excited from your experience. Could you share the role that social media has played in the growth of your business and help others who are listening to this program sort of understand from your perspective as an entrepreneur how it's been able to help you achieve your growth goals?
Absolutely. You know, I wouldn't have a business without social media. Thanks to Facebook and Twitter, I have never had to pay for advertising. I had actually booked a spot, excuse me, in a very popular parenting periodical and ended up canceling my ad because I didn't need it. Basically, it's what I like to call the Facebook domino effect. I've been able to have my friends market my business for me. And so Jules Ford Maternity has its own Facebook page. And so when I like something, all the 600-plus people I'm friends with see it. And then if one of them likes it, all their 600-plus friends, quote-unquote, like it. And then that's what I call the domino effect. So from that, I've gotten a ton of orders. That's how I've gotten, you know, publicity in magazines from different bloggers, all over the gamut. So, yeah, I've never had to pay a dime for any sort of advertising recognition, but I've gotten orders from Alaska to, you know, right out in Manchester, England, all because I like to think of Facebook.
And how much of your time are you spending working your social media marketing efforts?
You know, in the beginning, it was probably, I want to say, about 2 hours a day. Now, maybe it's 4 hours a week. Because I just go in and, you know, update my status or update some new photos and let it work for me, essentially.
Do you think that that is, from others that you know that are entrepreneurs that are using social media, is that a common kind of improvement in efficiency, and that, you know, after you do whatever requires the amount of time in the beginning, then it's more of a maintaining and improving? Is that fair?
Yes, that would be absolutely fair to say. As soon as you get it set up, which is the most time-consuming component of that, you're ready to rock and roll. And like I said, you just let it do the work for you. And it wasn't, you know, this didn't happen overnight by any means, but definitely within a month I started seeing results and, you know, would get an order with a note attached to it. Oh, I'm friends with so-and-so who knows so-and-so. And I'm like, who? And I'm like, why am I getting all these personal, you know what I mean? But then I'm like, oh, it's because of Facebook. It's because of Facebook. So, and you know, I had looked into, oh, go ahead.
No, I keep talking. You're more interesting than I am.
Well, I'm sure that's not true in any stage or form, but thank you. I had looked into doing, you know, Google AdWords and all that because I only have an online presence and, you know, had budgeted for it, and I had saved myself so much money. There is absolutely no reason to pay for advertising in this day and age as long as you know how to use social media to your advantage. It's going to be like, advertising will be like classroom education, almost a thing of the past. Everything's online now, you know what I mean? I think in 10, 20 years, there will be much less of a use and a demand for it once people start figuring out how to make the system work for them and their company.
I'm fascinated because in a year, you've been able to create a community, not by yourself, but through your relationships, online community that is a significant advantage to growing your business and generating awareness for your brand, which to me is so exciting. And you're right, the price points of social media marketing are so advantageous for entrepreneurs that it is, I think it is mandatory, and you to be in a B2C business like you are, I think, and or you don't have to have a demographic that is social media friendly like you do as well. I just think hearing someone like you talk, it should inspire others to rethink if they're not doing more in social media, to how do I use these tools to enable my business's growth and awareness.
You know, it's funny too, because everybody, when I first got into business, everyone's like, oh, do you have a Twitter account? And I was really gun-shy about it because I wasn't really sure what the point of Twitter was. Like, I would just update people like what I was doing at that very moment, which was never very exciting. But I finally said, okay, you know, I'll give it a try. And within 2 months, I went from having no followers to 50 followers. And then the following month, I had another 25, the following month I had another 100, and it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And I was tweeting the most, what I felt were really mundane things, like, okay, I'm buying fabric for this new piece, and I upload a photo, but people found it really interesting. So don't be, I would tell anyone who is in, you know, any field, don't be gun-shy. Just do it. Even if you think, oh my gosh, I sound ridiculous, nobody's going to care what I'm doing right now. It's not true. People are interested in other people. You know, that's why I think reality TV is so popular right now. People want to be able to relate. They want to know instantly what's going on. They don't want to wait. It's really, really interesting.
And I think it's, from a customer's perspective, to be able to have a relationship with the owner of the business and the designer of the clothes is a real special relationship to have that makes that a loyal client and not just a good customer, from my perspective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's special because, you know, it is such a exciting time of someone's life, and it's, you know, there's nothing more rewarding than getting, you know, a handwritten note from someone thanking them. You know, I do a lot of custom work for bridesmaids, you know, special showers, events like that. And, you know, to be able to talk to the customer back and forth, I mean, they love that I'm so reachable and attainable. And I love the interaction with them because I think if not, a lot would get lost in translation, and it just wouldn't make my company what it is. And we're all about being personable. We're all about being reachable and attainable. And through Facebook and everything, we've been able to achieve and maintain that status.
Talk to us about where the future for Jules Ford Maternity is. When I have you back in 6 months or a year or 3 years, what's the business going to look like?
Rick, we're going to be rocking and rolling. We are going to expand into a full-blown mommy and me boutique to turn those customers into clients. We are going to start selling, you know, things for the nursery, all things baby, and just really expand into other markets while staying in the motherhood market, if that makes sense. So we'll, you know, baby things and baby needs and all that good stuff, but it'll still be, you know, about moms and motherhood. And we'll continue the line and expand the line and just keep growing. Just keep growing. So hopefully by then I'll have, I don't know, maybe 5,000 Twitter followers. Maybe we should set that as the goal.
Okay. We can. And I also saw you in this issue of the Orange County Business Journal, because I see that you're a nominee for the 12th Annual Family-Owned Business Awards.
I am. We found out we were nominated, and we're just absolutely blown away. It is such an honor. If you read some of the businesses that are nominated, the company of which we are in is absolutely mind-blowing. So, but it's, you know what it is? It's just, it's inspiring. Because I was 8.5 months pregnant when I started this business. And everyone told me, you're crazy. There's no way you're going to have a baby, a newborn, and a startup company. Like, you're out of your mind. And, you know, a year later, look where we are. So that's just a sort of reminder that, you know, hard work and perseverance and persistence really does pay off.
And I also want to thank you and comment that it's been, I'm not sure where you are because I know you're a moving target, but if you're in your office, it's been very quiet in the background. So we must have selected a good time to do this interview with you today.
You did. I am in my office. Thank you so much. I've heard him screaming. I've heard the baby downstairs. I'm like, oh, goodness, I hope they can't hear that. But I'm glad it's been muffled. So wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, Rick.
Tell us your website or your Facebook.
JulesFordMaternity.com.
Say it again. I'm sorry. I was talking. I apologize.
Oh, I apologize. It's JulesFordMaternity.com, and you can also find us on Facebook. Just type in Jules Ford Maternity and become our friend or like our page.
Would you just spell that one time, please?
Sure. It's J-U-L-E-S. Second word is F-O-R-D. And then third word is maternity, M-A-T-E-R-N-I-T-Y. Jules Ford Maternity.
I've had a great time with you here on a radio program. Thanks for being a friend of the show and an inspiration to others. Wish you the best of luck on the Family Business Awards. I will see you at the luncheon because I, too, will be there. I'm excited to see you again at the luncheon at the end of the month.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
You, too. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right, Jules Christensen of Jules Ford Maternity, sharing a lot of great insight about social media, starting a business, and being an entrepreneur who starts a business from personal experience and building it out of her home office. So that's great. I hope you've enjoyed both interviews that we've had today. Encourage you to spend a couple minutes checking out both of our recent guests' websites to learn more about their firms. And this is Rick Franzi. Saying until the next time we have a chance to talk, here's hoping that all your decisions moves your business in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, the radio show, only on OCTalkRadio.net.